From the Sky News Centre at 6, the mother of two children found dead in a Spanish hotel room has been charged with their murder. 43-year-old Leanne Smith was held by police and Lorette de Mar after the 5-year-old and 11-month-old were found on Tuesday. Our crime correspondent Martin Brunt is on the Costa Brava and says the judge said there was evidence the children had been suffocated.
He also referred to an alleged confession, a note that was found with her. He talked about that in his judgment, and he also said that during today's hearing she had not retracted that confession.
A Marine from 40 Commando Royal Marines has been killed in Afghanistan. His family has been informed. Meanwhile, the military says there's nothing unusual about plans to place around 8,000 British troops in Afghanistan under the operational command of the United States, command and control in the south of the country will be split into two areas. Social workers in Nottinghamshire have been criticised for not doing enough to help a disabled child found hanged in her bedroom. 8-year-old Charlotte Avenor had been known to authorities for several years, yet not enough was done to protect her from neglect by her parents. The County Council's Anthony May admits mistakes were made.
The judge said that Charlotte's death was a tragic accident, but the state in which she was found was preventable. We have to accept some responsibility for this.
It's been a day of sharp falls on the world's financial markets. At one point this afternoon, London's FTSE 100 traded below 5,000 points for the first time since November. Fears over the Eurozone were eased after the German Parliament approved their country's share of a 750 billion euro rescue deal. 6 premature babies are being treated in intensive care in Oxford. The parents of the first sextuplets for 17 years are said to be praying for a small miracle. They were born 14 weeks early. U2 have been forced to postpone the next leg of their world tour after singer Bono injured his back. The singer's undergone emergency surgery in Germany. That's the latest. I'm David Spencer.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a voice.
Do you think you have a problem with cocaine or other drugs? Cocaine Anonymous can help. Visit our website www.cauk.org.uk. We're here and we're free. Call 0800 612 0225.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
Welcome back to Friday Drive Time. Now, the managing editor of BBC Radio Bristol, Tim Pemberton, is here to talk about his station's new sound, which rolled out this week, and his vision for the future. But never mind the jingles, has Radio Bristol been losing its local identity since he joined the station in early 2008? I'll be asking Tim to explain why some of the station's most popular presenters, such as David Lowe and John Turner, have disappeared. And Michael Jackson was painted by Rupert Murdoch's Sun newspaper 10 days ago as a drugged-up lunatic. But might Michael have been murdered last year because of his strong views against the US government and the influence he had? There's certainly an inquiry into his death. We hear a very lucid Michael Jackson speaking about the music industry in 2004, around the same time as the Sun's tapes. The Sun paints a very different picture of the singer-songwriter to that which we're going to hear today. But before all that, here's BCFM's arts correspondent Billy Quain with his top tips for where to loiter in the coming week.
Welcome back to Friday Drive Time. My name is Billy Quain, and for the next 5 minutes I'm going to take you through my recommendations on what to see and do in Bristol for the week ahead for not very much money. Enjoy the sunshine at the Eastside Roots Third Community Spring Fair tomorrow from 12:30 until 8 p.m. It's on at the Stapleton Road train station off St. Mark's Road in Easton. There will be live music by the Africa Sambistas, Inner Heights, Molly Sampson and the Family Johnson, arts and crafts stalls, children's entertainment and activities, workshops for adults including gardening, sustainable living and holistic health. There will be a whole food cafe, plant sales and free fun and games for all the family. Also tomorrow, from midday until 6 p.m. for free, and from 6 p.m. until 6 a.m. it will cost you £5, it's the Stokescroft Street Fest. Full details, log on to the internet, stokescroftstreetfest.org.uk. Tomorrow evening from 8 p.m. the Christmas Steps Arts Quarter Night of the Year Street Party takes place, and that is also free. For those early risers tomorrow, get yourselves to Blaze Castle at 4:30 a.m. for a Dawn Chorus Bird Walk. There is food for free at Brandon Hill from noon until 5 p.m. tomorrow. Live music, dancing and wild food walks. Come dressed as an urban or woodland animal or plant and bring a picnic. On Sunday, it's Apocalypse Wow in Lee Woods. It's mysterious outdoorsy fun from the Cubesters. A food drop destined for the central city has fallen between the territories of two clans relegated to the edge of the city. Who will discover it first? Choose your clan. Battle for survival. Email battlespace@hotmail.co.uk and state whether you will be a hand or foot. You will then receive your objectives. Your clothing should be dressed for the apocalypse. This Sunday, the 23rd of May, Bristol Aerial Rowing Club are hosting their annual Splash and Dash. Come and try rowing. It's an afternoon of fun 200-metre races against other novice teams. Friends and family are more than welcome to come along and support, and the bar and barbecue will be open. On Wednesday at 1pm in St Stephen's Church, backed by popular request, this week is an organ feature by Professor Philip Wilby, a composer for the Black Dyke Mills Band, amongst other things. He is joined by the very suave and entertaining Gordon Pullen, who is a tenor. Opening last night, I went along to see it and it was great. It's a still life exhibition at Howie's on 62 Queen's Road in Bristol. It runs until the 30th of May and it is a fresh and exciting photography exhibition showcasing the work of local artists in Bristol. It's running as part of the Bristol Festival of Photography. The show will also provide the opportunity for other professionals and amateurs to showcase their own inspiring images at an open slideshow night. At Paintworks on the Bath Road in Brislington, Sideways Looks 2010 is the annual show of student video, photography, journalism and web media produced by third level students on the BA Media and Cultural Studies course at the University of West of England. It's a one-day mini festival with photographs and web media work on show and film schedule throughout the day from 10am until 7pm. On Monday, at St George's at 6pm, Melvin Bragg is coming to town to talk about the South Bank show, Final Cut. It will cost you £6.50 full price, £4.50 concessions. On Thursday evening at the Tobacco Factory, also as part of the Bristol Festival of Ideas, Lady Antonia Fraser will be talking with Ian Rickson about her late husband, Harold Pinter. It promises to be a fascinating evening, with Bristol's own Show of Strength Theatre Company providing some rehearsed readings from his plays The Room, premiered in Bristol, and The Celebration, his final work. The Pillowman, as performed by the Kelvin Players, is having its final performance tomorrow evening on the Gloucester Road at 7:30pm. Tickets will cost you £9. At the Alma next week, Stepping Out Theatre and Dreamweavers present Vampire Nights. It will cost you £8 and £6 concession. Mayfest programming comes to a close this weekend. My recommendations are the Electric Hotel at the Bristol Harbourside. It will cost you £18 full price or £15 concession, but very, very well worth the money. Also, it's the SS Arcadia, brought to you by the Stand and Stare Collective. It runs until tomorrow evening with a matinee tomorrow at 3pm and it's in a secret location in the city centre. £10 entry or £7 concessions and my favourite show of the whole series, Tiptrick, brought to you by the Wattle and Daub Figure Theatre. It finishes tomorrow evening at 7pm in the brewery. It costs £8 or £6 concessions. And to finish this week, may I bring to your attention some of the fabulous events going on at St George's for the week ahead. This evening at 7:30pm, it's the Chamber Orchestra of Basel with Angelica Hewitt on the piano. They are playing Bach, like you can hear in the background, and Frank Martin. Thursday, May 27th at 8pm, the Portico Quartet, the near perfect conclusion of our jazz, not jazz season. It will cost you £14 or £11 concessions, and Friday, bringing the Shostakovich series to a glorious conclusion. Raphael Valfish on the cello and John York take you through Beethoven, Shostakovich, Barber, and the Shostakovich Viola Sonata adapted for performance on the cello. My name is Billy Quain. Those are my recommendations for the week ahead. I hope you have a great weekend.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Billy. And Billy's Billy Quain, you can hear him every Saturday, and you can hear him tomorrow morning between 10am and 12 noon, just as you can every Saturday here on BCFM 93.2. Now, the letters page in the Bristol Evening Post has been boiling over just about once a month or so this year over changes at BBC Radio Bristol, more so, quite possibly, than since the station started back in 1970. The station's managing editor, who arrived early in 2008, Tim Pemberton, had hoped his hiring and firing of programme staff would drive the station's listening figures up. Well, we have to trust the BBC on whether or not that's happened, but with headlines like "Time for some new ideas at Radio Anywhere" and the vast majority of letters indicating that Tim's failed to do this. Getting rid of some of the most popular voices and hiring some new people with no connection to the city. Anyway, buoyed up by a Sony Radio Academy Silver Award for his station's programme about Britain's last World War I veteran, Harry Patch, and in an attempt to claw back his audience, Tim has relaunched the station this week. Hello, Tim, and welcome to Drive Time.
Hello, Tony. It's a very entertaining introduction. I should just point out, actually, that I joined the station in 2006.
Oh, was it?
Yes.
I thought you'd been here 2.5 years. I was reading on the Radio Academy.
I joined
Academy
in March 2006, and I have to say that, as I say, it was an entertaining introduction in the sense that I'm not sure I recognised me getting rid of people or sacking them, but we can talk about that.
Well, so, I mean, what about John Turner? That was quite controversial, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, John Turner retired as he was entitled to do. I think we made that plain on air at the time, and also, in terms of the press releases, what had happened was quite simply John had carried on at Radio Bristol, gratefully to us actually, on the breakfast programme for a year and a bit, really, past the BBC's retirement age. It obviously, breakfast is quite a tough programme in terms of, you know, the physical demands that it places on you. And of course, being past that age, he was entitled to say that he didn't really want to keep getting up in the morning, and he'd quite like to retire, and that was his right, and we honoured it. So I think people were reading more into that than there really was. That, you know, I think there was a search for a story that just wasn't there. It was his decision, not mine.
Okay, so what about this new sound that we've got this week? I mean, I've heard this. It's basically just some new jingles, isn't it, really?
No, there's a couple of other things that have happened which I think go along with it. Certainly, yes. One of the things we tried to do was to listen to, you know, the people who've been in touch with us directly and indirectly, and universally, not just with Radio Bristol, but with a lot of other radio stations, people find jingles and trails, which sometimes they conflate as adverts, annoying, and they don't like them and they tune them out. I have to say that's the regular listeners who may be listening to you for a long period of time across the day. So of course, if you're listening for 2, 3, 4 hours a day, you are going to hear quite a lot of the station idents and the trails, and I think some people found them a bit intrusive. And what we've tried to do is listen to them. We've come up with what we think is a nice, fresh, contemporary sound, but perhaps less intrusive. We've dropped a lot of the voiceovers so that you're having a lot of instrumental beds, and we're using our presenters more to endorse the station and ident the station, because there's a flip side to this, which is, as you'll know more than anyone else as well, that the way in which our audience is measured is through radar diaries, and so we do need people to recognise that the radio station that they're listening to is us, and that's why we are very keen to have a clear identity and clear branding.
Now, these radar diaries, we here at BCFM, we're always asking how many people are listening to us, and we never know. So how do we figure? Do you know? And how do you get on?
I don't know BCFM's figure. Sadly,
we probably don't even appear there, do we? Compared to you guys,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether you subscribe to Rachel, but certainly they have various sample sizes, and I mean, it can range from anything like 900 people to 1,200 people, and from that they extrapolate out the size of your audience. And it's not Radio Bristol's figures, it's not the BBC's figures, this is across the industry, it's the same figures that Heart use, and any other commercial station as well. So it's a joint industry body that measures the figures. And as you've pointed out, I'm very pleased to say that in the last week we put on 10,000 listeners, both on the quarter and on the year, which is a really impressive result, and I think a real tribute to my staff and my presenters.
But hasn't it been sort of gradually dropping over the last few years?
No, I don't think that's true. I mean, what we've had some fairly major changes, one of which, the key one, I think, which people write to us about, is that in order to facilitate the the birth of BBC Somerset on FM, the 95.5 frequency that we used, which was the most established frequency in Radio Bristol, we had to give to BBC Somerset essentially for reasons of topography, so that they could reach the whole of their patch, and that is a very strong signal. I think people looking at the audience figures, because we no longer served Somerset, I just hope people understand this, so we were broadcasting to a smaller geographical area, smaller TSA as they call it, then of course there was a commensurate drop in the audience, because they were no longer counted in the amount of people that we were broadcasting to. So I think people thought, oh gosh, suddenly the audience for Radio Bristol has gone down. No, it hasn't. It's just that we are being measured across a smaller area, because that's who we're broadcasting to.
Now, what are your thoughts personally about this whole sort of digital thing? Because the BBC has been a big part of all that, and I think there's some very, you know, correct concerns really, saying, well, what is the point? And it's not very sustainable to be encouraging people to throw away radios which work perfectly well and get these nice new digital ones. Yeah. The other thing is, of course, that the digital ones actually take about twice as amount of energy as the old analog ones used to actually run. So do you think the BBC really should have got involved with this whole digital switchover process?
I think that we all have to be a bit careful about dismissing advances in technology and the way in which we listen. I think that the proof of it is, you know, people and their take up of Freeview, you know, it's been fantastic actually, and the whole digital switchover for television has been very successful. Radio is slightly different. Some of the research has shown that people are very keen to buy DAB radios. That's great, that's a good thing. How they're using it is quite an interesting thing for us all, because rather than availing themselves of the wider choice on DAB, what people seem to be buying it for is for the better quality of listening, so you can hear, you know, even greater clarity when you listen on DAB.
But I don't know how many times you've been driving around with your digital radio, and suddenly you can be on the drive of your house, and actually suddenly you can't even pick up Radio 4 or Radio 3. You know, it's very weird the way, in some, you know, you could be driving along and suddenly it just disappears. Now, the old analog signals never used to do that. I mean, is this really a step forward in technology?
I think you should see some of the letters I get about the reception issues people have in terms of Radio Bristol. Where I live out in North Somerset, a lot of people there know that they have to contort themselves to listen on FM. They can be in their house and listening fine 1 minute, and then a slight adjustment one way and they lose completely the station. So they've always been those kind of problems. And, you know, it is according to the transmitters, certainly for analog transmission, and also for Radio Bristol. You know, we follow local radio, unlike the BBC national stations, don't have their own DAB multiplexes to serve them. So what they do is piggyback the commercial radio stations. Don't know if people understand that. So therefore,
well, I don't, I'm afraid, no. What so is a multiplex? Is a cinema, isn't it?
No, it's essentially the pipe that pumps down the signal for the stations. And I think that with that in mind, it means that the commercial stations, when they make any changes, local radio is affected by that. And some local radio stations aren't even bundled with the commercial stations. We are bundled with the one here in Bristol.
Okay, Radio Bristol started broadcasting about 40 years ago, back in 1970.
It is our anniversary year, yes.
So let's have a little trip down memory lane.
This is BBC Radio Bristol. The time now is 8 o'clock. Here's Jonathan Fulford with the very first edition of Morning West. Hello and welcome.
This is Roger Bennett in the AA spotter plane, about 1,500 feet above the Somerset countryside, just to the north of Weston-super-Mare.
Hello and good morning to you from the Bristol Flower Show here on the Downs, one of the biggest flower shows in the country. Today's the show's last day. Let's hope that the weather clears up from the fine drizzle we've had since early this morning.
One of the family, BBC Radio Bristol.
Now, Tim, Radio Bristol sounded quite different in those days, didn't it?
That's memory lane, fantastic. Really, really great. Some fantastic broadcasters there. Roger Bennett, of course, and Kate Ady too. Yeah, fantastic. And it is a completely different sound. I'm sure it fitted the times, and we sound different now.
What about the local connections, though? Because this is one of the things that the Letters in the Evening Post have constantly been criticising Radio Bristol for, and that is that we don't have anywhere near enough local voices. In fact, you yourself aren't really a local voice yourself, are you?
I don't know what you mean, Tony.
But you were working, hang on. I had a look at you on the internet, and you had a job, I think, is it Radio Shropshire?
I was a managing editor in Shropshire for 4 years, yes.
Up in Birmingham, but not Bristol.
No, I was managing editor in Shropshire for 4 years. I was the editor in Manchester for 2 years. I worked in Manchester for 8 years. I worked in Wales for 4 years. And I worked in Birmingham for 2 years as well. So I've moved around quite a bit and had experience in radio across a range of stations. But in terms of Radio Bristol, I think that the question of localness is one that I think has to be handled with some care, actually, because I think we need to be clear what people are saying. And I think sometimes when people are talking about localness, quite often actually the agenda is really about change and their response to change. Because if you then analyse, do we have the same amount of stories? Actually, we've probably got more stories about the locality than we've ever had before. In terms of our bulletins, they're stuffed full of local stories. In terms of the people that we have on air, essentially the local character largely comes from the contributors and the guests, but even in terms of the presenters that we use, if you go through our lineup, you know, you've got people like Faye Dicker, is a local person, born and bred here. I'll come back to Steve Lefebvre. Graham Torrington has worked in the area for the best part of 13-15 years. Steve Yabsley is a local person. You know, Peter Owl, we've just signed to do the afternoon show. He's been working in this area for over 20 years. Ben Prater is a local person. That's not even counting other people like Ali Vowles, who's on Saturday mornings. I mean, there's a raft of people who are, you know, part of the fabric of the station. When Richard White, we signed Richard White, he's a local person that we've signed. So I think when people talk about localness, sometimes I'm a bit bemused as to what they're saying, when I think, in my view, quite often what they're concerned about is change and the changes that we've made. Because even with the David Lowe argument, which was, you know, the catalyst for the start of the most recent letters, David Lowe isn't a Bristolian. That's so.
Well, it's a, you know, it's a regional program, that, isn't
no,
it?
No, but you know, it's but that's the thing that people have to be clear about in terms of what are they saying? Are they saying, are they, do they mean Bristol? Do they mean the region? What I think is really going on is that if you introduce change, that is always challenging, and that always takes a bit of getting used to. And I think that that's what we've experienced with Steve Lefebvre. When Steve Lefebvre came, actually, who's the breakfast presenter, it was interesting that when Steve started in August last year, as I say, for 3 months, you know, I think we had one letter about the fact that he'd come, that he was different, which is an interesting thing. When we then had the letter in the papers about David Lowe, who actually isn't from Bristol, that was the catalyst for a whole range of people to start saying other things. Now, as we talked about earlier, because a number of people have said we have some concerns about the locality, it doesn't mean to say that the audience isn't with you or isn't listening or isn't increasing, because objectively, on the measures that are used by the industry, we've gained audience. And actually, we know in Steve's case in particular, between October and December, in a three-month sweep, he put on audience too. And in the latest sweep as well, he's put on audience. So I think we just have to be a bit careful about what we're saying when we're talking about Radio Bristol isn't local or doesn't seem to.
Well, I mean, certainly you've got some local personalities, not all local personalities, but I think one of the thrust of the letters, well, we'll be hearing a couple of them later, is to do with the content as well. And, you know, I know myself, you know, from the production point of view, you're faced with two different, I think, I mean, essentially two different alternatives. You've got a lot of press releases coming in which are pushing commercial material, and on the other hand, you've got a lot more effort for production staff to do, to actually go out and find stories for themselves. And it seems to me that it may be that it's easier to get a celebrity in, which is being actually sort of pushed towards you by a PR company, rather than actually go out and find a genuine local story or a genuine local individual who may be a celebrity for the future.
I think I'm following that. I mean, in terms of our stories, as I think
because there's a lot of pressure, isn't there? There's a lot of pressure from the PR companies.
I would refute and refute very strongly either the idea that we don't do the same amount, and in fact, I think more local stories than we've ever done, and that is a straightforward look at the story count that we have, or that our journalists do not get out and get out into the community and to try and meet and talk to local people. Because that's a serious charge against the journalists who work in the Bristol newsroom.
Well, I was actually talking about the production side, the programme side, really, there. Because it's a lot easier to get a celebrity who's being sort of presented by a public relations company than it is to actually go out and find people.
When you say in terms of in the production side, are you talking about stories on the programme, the content for the programme? Is that what you were saying? Which is what I was responding to. Because I would say to you, if you listen to most of our programmes, they have a lot of local material in them, and we're committed to that local material. And if you can say specifically, I think in this area or this programme, you don't have local material, I'm happy to answer that, because I think you'd be hard pressed to say, Tim, in this area you do not have local material.
Okay, what about this thing, the financial crisis in a lot of people's minds? We've just had a couple of politicians on who are saying this is one of the things they get constantly on the doorsteps as they've been going around in the run-up to the election. Do you think broadcasters have a role in explaining what's going on with the financial crisis to people and really unfolding some of the complexities of economics?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you listened to our breakfast programme in the morning, not only do we have some business briefers on at the new time now, actually, of 7:25, where we talk about business and the effect of not only the recession, possibly double-dip recession, and the effect for the West in terms of how that's going to affect our region. We also do stories in the main body of the programme, whereby we try and explain to people how that might affect their lives. And one of the things I always like to do and try and get our journalists and presenters to do is not to talk about these things remotely, but to try and earth them in people's lives, in what's happening in the lives of the ordinary person in the streets, people that you and I bump into. What's the real impacts on them? Because that's how it becomes alive and becomes real for people.
Now, there's been a struggle over the centuries, really, between private interests and the government and the public interests, really, over the whole banking system, the whole process of the creation of money. Do you think we as broadcasters, you at Radio Bristol and us, have got it right?
In terms of our analysis?
Yeah.
Of how... well, the BBC doesn't seek to be either a, you know, a sort of prophet or in any way a sort of agitator in terms of talking about how wealth is created or how wealth is distributed, and to take sides either on in terms of capitalism or socialism. That's not our role. Our role is to report things as they happen and to, as best as we can, give a fair account and to give a range of views and let people make up their own minds. So to that extent, I would say yes, absolutely, the BBC has got it right. It's got some excellent people working for it. Robert Peston is just a fantastic journalist.
Well, I'm more of a Paul Mason man myself.
Okay. And I just think that that's the BBC's role, is to provide excellence in its journalism that would explain things to the audience and let the audience make up their own mind.
Okay, well, now we're also joined by Marina Morris, who has a report for us. Marina, what have you got?
Yes, hello. Today I will talk about the apparent attitude of the new government to the BBC. In speech on 16th of March 2009, the now Prime Minister David Cameron said, "I can announce today that we would freeze the BBC licence fee for 1 year. I think that would be an important signal to the country of the need for all public institutions in these difficult economic circumstances to do more with less. This policy was missing from his party's 2010 manifesto. Speaking at the Mark Target lecture at the Edinburgh International Television Festival in August 2009, the chairman and chief executive of the News Corporation, James Murdoch, said of the BBC, "We have a system in which state-sponsored media, the BBC in particular, grows even more dominant. That process has to be reversed, and the only reliable, durable, and perpetuum guarantor of independence is profit. These complaints appear to be based on diminishing advertising revenue across the sector, driven both by the recession and competition from the new advertising channels such as internet. A number of newspapers have plans to charge a subscription for access to their web-based news content. But now, will that work in competition? How will work this competition with free BBC content? In September 2009, The Sun, a newspaper under the control of the News Corporation, announced that it was changing its support from Labour to the Conservative Party. In the report Putting Quality First, the BBC has announced plans to refocus and reprioritize its spending. These plans include the closure of the BBC Asian Network and BBC Six Music. Together, this a halving of its web-based output, a cap on its payment for sports rights, News Corporation control Sky TV, and a possible sell-off of publishing operations. BBC Six Music had a typical audience of around 700,000 listeners in the final months of 2009. According to the 2001 census, 2.3 million UK inhabitants, or 4% of the population, are of Asian descent, yet apart from a small number of soap characters and newsreaders, they are heavily underrepresented in the nation's media. The same census indicates that 8% of the Bristol's population is of black or Asian descent, the majority of whom live in the inner city. One of the BBC's six stated public purposes is representing the UK, its nations, regions, and communities. According to the BBC Trust, the BBC should engage audience in output that brings benefits to the UK as a whole. Such output might, for example, promote healthier living. According to the University of York in 2006, British children are the unhappiest in any wealthy European country. One in six people in the UK suffers from the depression or chronic anxiety. Our population is aging these less young people to potentially care for more elderly. How do we get quality back into life? One of answers is to change our rational approach. Our brains are giant computers which act and react according to its programming, and too often the programs are faulty. If we would like to stay healthy for as long as possible, we might have conscience to change our behavior and reprogram the mind. We need to walk or cycle through the beauty of nature that surrounds us, not view it through the windows of our cars or the TV in front of our sofas. Can the BBC inspire us to change our passive, negative, and inferior behaviors? Or will it encourage us to digest images of a potential new lifestyle in the comfort of our homes with no change in our behavior? Can the BBC ever achieve its impressive aim?
Thanks very much, Marina. It's quite a lot to chew on there, I think, Tim. But first of all, what about these changes with the Asian Network and Six Music? That does seem a little bit of a problem because, I mean, both of these are quite well listened to, and particularly Six Music is doing a lot of innovative programmes. Why do you think that it is that they've decided to get rid of those ones?
I'm sure, Tony, it won't surprise you that if I say that that's not really for me to comment on, as I'm not the controller of Six Music and I'm not the director general of the BBC. What I will say is that people are clear that the BBC has put this as a proposal before the Trust for the Trust to consider it. The Trust is the body that represents the general public in terms of its oversight of the BBC, and they will take their own soundings and they will make the judgment as to whether the decision taken by others, not by me, is the correct one with regards to those stations, really.
Okay, what about what Mr. Cameron is saying about you having to do more with less? Are you able to do that?
Well, that's an even worse question for me, really, because I wouldn't get into the politics of that. It's not, again, not really for me to engage on the politics of this. We are responsible to the licence fee payers. We try and serve the licence fee payers. In matters of governance of the BBC and the direction of the BBC, We have an excellent Director General who's tasked with that. He interfaces with government, and I think he's the one who will be having those kind of conversations. But it won't be for me at a lowly grade of an editor to be commenting on what Mr. Cameron has or hasn't said.
And what about the other Mr. Cameron? Mr. Murdoch, James Murdoch. So you allowed to talk about that? He's saying, look, the BBC has got is actually stealing a march on the commercial sector because it's got its income guaranteed, and actually with a diminishing advertising market, the commercial sector simply can't compete, and it's just not fair.
I think that all of us are under pressure, but again, it really is for others, excuse me, to comment on that rather than me. The one thing I would say is the BBC, as I've said before, is always beholden to the licence fee payer. We make our programmes for the general public. We seek to serve them and serve them well. We are committed to the greatest quality at the best value. And we hope our programmes stand the test of time and stand the test of the audiences that we seek to serve. And they are the ultimate arbiters of what we do, the general public, the licence fee payer and the audiences. And they will then make the decisions of whether we are worth it, whether we are valuable or not.
Now, what about the wider question that Marina was talking about there, which is this whole idea of, you know, are we focusing too much on our television sets, and can broadcasters actually provide the sort of content which will encourage people to go out and actually experience the world more, or are we focused too much on our TVs?
I scare myself with the amount of television that I watch, actually. You know, it's a very seductive medium, and you sit down of an evening to watch 1 hour, you end up watching four. You wonder where the time's gone. I grew up in a household where we didn't have television, and that's why I fell in love with radio, and I still love radio to this day. It inspires you, it expands your mind, it challenges you, it encourages you to get out there, and I think radio does have that ability. I think television has that ability too, but radio, because you're having to make the pictures yourself in your mind, is perhaps a more imaginative medium because of that, and can do more as a result of it, and I think that's fabulous, and we have a role to play in that.
Right, well, Marina has been out on the streets to find out whether or not you listen to BBC Radio Bristol and what, if anything, you tune in for.
What do you think about the service provided by BBC Radio Bristol?
Yeah, decent fans, yeah. Well, a local radio station, you know, to keep it together with local travel and weather and stuff. Yeah, it's quite good. I quite like the presenters. Yeah, I mean, I think they focus more... I mean, I don't listen... I wouldn't say it's more a music station. I'd say it's more kind of news and chats, you know, which I prefer. But, yeah, I mean, it's always current issues. They have a lot of... Yeah, issues surrounding Bristol, so which is always good. Yeah, I mean, it's quite a good station. No,
not really. I don't listen to it, so it's difficult for me to have any strong opinions. I have done in the past, but I don't find it interesting enough to listen to. I know you listen to the radio for about half an hour in the morning anyway, so... They always used to provide a good balance of local news, which is what you want. So you want local news, local travel information and so on, and that always used to be quite good. Whether they still do that, I don't know.
No. I don't really listen to the radio. I just don't. I listen to like my music on my iPod mostly. Well, from what I know, I think it's quite good because they do traffic and stuff. And I think they play good music for mostly everyone, not just teens or the elderly. And news, I believe, is good. And also, like I said, they do traffic and controversial stuff too. Yeah. They commentate on Rovers quite a lot, Bristol Rovers, and I'm a Rovers fan, so that's the main reason I listen to it. And also like local news and that sort of thing in the mornings. Yeah, it's always up to date, news and traffic. I listen to it in the mornings, like going to work, so the traffic news and where there's like delays and things like that. Yeah, that's the main reason, yeah.
No, not really. It's just it's not my taste. The only time I would listen to it is for a football commentary, maybe. And that's about the only time. Then even that's a rare event nowadays.
No, I don't. No. I probably don't have time to listen to it, really.
Always. All right. Very good. Good balance, but it still wants different producers on it. Now, they used to have good producers, but now some are not quite right.
Who's your favourite presenter?
I quite like that. What's the funny guy? Is it Steve Lapsley, is it? That guy, you know, he's a bit... He should know, come on.
I think
he's quite quirky. I think he's on around 12 o'clock. He's quite good. But yeah, I mean, it's quite a good show.
I don't have one. Okay. Jeff 21's pretty good, and he does all the sports news, and that's what I'm usually interested in.
My favourite show is on BBC Six Music. It's Sean Kearney in the morning. They play good music, so that's what I like.
Well, then, one I used to like regularly, but he died, didn't he? Roger Bennett. He was the best one of the lot.
What would you expect from your ideal programme?
I don't know, really. Probably my own music, but I mean, I've got a real weird taste in music, so yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's good as it is, so...
Well, I would listen to it in the morning, and the main reason I would listen to it would be, firstly, to get local travel information, so what the roads are like, because driving into Bristol is always difficult. And then local news as to what's happening in the local communities. That's what I'd look for in a local radio show.
Well, probably the music, so probably like top 40 charts or something. So they're probably my favourite. Maybe create more stuff for the teenage people, and something more interesting for them, like charts, and maybe interviewing like our genre of music, like Dizzy Rascal or something. So yeah, probably about shopping. I'm a really good shopper. I shop all the time. So like where there's good offers and that sort of thing, buy one get one free, 50% off, that sort of thing, that would be perfect for me. Just keep doing a brilliant job, that's all I can think of.
If I want to listen to music, I have an iPod, I listen to the music that I want to listen to. I don't tend to listen to, I listen to radio in work, but that's not Radio Bristol. Not especially, no, I can't really criticise when I don't listen to it. I've no idea what they do.
Probably a good combination between music and some entertaining comments and news.
Well, Tim, that was an interesting selection from Marina Morris, who was vox popping people out on the streets there. Do you think maybe that that in a way you're in a cleft stick here, because so many people now want to choose their own music, and therefore they're listening to it on iPods, as we heard several people saying there. How are you ever going to break that, to actually say, well, we've got something better for you to listen to than you can choose yourself?
Yeah, it's an interesting dilemma, because we are a largely, essentially, a speech station that plays some music, and not the other way around. I think sometimes people confuse the two. We are a speech station that plays music, not a music station that does speech. And so primarily we play about, you know, we have about 60% of our content is speech and only 40% is music. So people who are wanting music are not really necessarily going to be satisfied by us at breakfast and at drive, because we have a large speech content then. When we do play music in the middle of the day, we hope that we pick the right tracks, and the tracks are tested to make sure that they're ones that the audience tell us that they like.
Now, are the DJs actually able to choose their own music? Because I know when I worked at the BBC, it was actually a computer used to kind of churn the music out, which is a bit difficult, isn't it?
No, but we have across the year four audience testing seminars that we have. We invite about 300 people in who fit the profile of the listeners who most listen to local radio, and we play them the music, the existing music that we have, music that we're thinking about, and they score that music, and they tell us what they like and what they love as music.
Well, this is all very well, but you may have a situation, it's a really dreary day, as we're going to hear a little clip from Jason Harold in a minute, where he's then saying, well, that music was inappropriate because it's a sunny day song and it's a dreary day. So, I mean, the idea of disconnecting the music from the person that's presenting it, surely that's just crazy.
No, but the skill of a presenter is not, let me bring in my bucket of records that I personally like and let me play them to you, because that's very indulgent. Actually, the skill of the presenter is to work with the music that we have confidence in, and to play records that may not be your personal favourites, but happen to be the favourites of other people. and that's where you really notice the difference in the quality of presenters. Indulgent presenters can only play the music that they love and can only enthuse about the music that they love. The best presenters can enthuse about music that they don't love, because they recognise it's music that means something to other people and has connections with other people. So they then, if they are clever and skillful, can tap into what this meant to people back in the 1970s, what memories it evoked, you know, what stories surround that piece of music, even though it wasn't their personal favourite.
Okay, so who is BBC Radio Bristol aimed at? Do you have a sort of target audience?
Well, we hope that we provide something for everybody, and that's what we are committed to doing. We love being local, we love the area, and we want to be enthusiastic about it. But naturally, because we're a speech station, we know that we serve the older end of the demographic. So typically, we are more attractive to people who are 50 and above, and the bulk of our audience is above 60, not because they're the only people that we're interested in, but because of the diet of speech that we provide and the content, the local content that we provide, that tends to be most attractive to them. Not exclusively, but mostly to them. It's interesting hearing people loving the fact that we do sport, interesting to hear that they love the news that we do, which is fantastic. People who wanted music would want to point them towards the fact that we do BBC Bristol Introducing, which is a fabulous show. Okay, it's on late at night over the weekend, but it's also available on the BBC iPlayer. That has a very strong following. We are the only station to do local music and to put the music of local bands in our daytime schedule. I mean, you can go and ask the commercial stations whether they do that, and you'll get quite short shrift, but we at BBC Radio Bristol, supporting local bands, do that.
But isn't that show on in the middle of the night?
As I say, it's available on the iPlayer, but just to make a distinction, the playing of local artists in the daytime schedule is in the daytime schedule. We put them on in the rotation in the daytime schedule and tell people where they can go and see these people.
Because the music companies that sort of feed into the wider, the music that you're playing most of the time, they're very powerful, aren't they? And it really crowds out local talent, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, you have to be popular. That's the bottom line. You do have to be popular. And the music that we are playing, we know is popular because it's been tested and it has been scored and ranked. So we have confidence in it. That said, we are committed to giving exposure to local artists, and I think we've done a great job. In Bristol Music Forum, who we work with, will tell you of the artists who we have supported, promoted, played in daytime. We've got the letters of thank you to prove it, and I think that we do a really good job on that. So we, you know, it's one of the first things I did when I came here. They asked for a meeting, I met with them, and I agreed that we would try and do what we could to help them to promote the local music scene.
So can you say, hand on heart, if a local group that's just starting out comes up to the reception on White Ladies Road with the CD, that they've got a good chance of getting it aired?
No, I couldn't say that, because we used the Bristol Music Forum because we had an honest conversation with them about the kind of music that would fit our station, and they are, if you like, the filters of what music is presented to Radio Bristol to be played in our daytime schedule.
So where would you suggest that local talent go to find them?
So if they get in touch with the Bristol Music Forum, there are a number of people who are involved, and be very careful with the name checks here, but Steve Parkas, who I understand is involved in BCFM as well, Graham Howells, who used to run the Costnall, all those kind of people are involved in this. And if they get the music to those people who know the local music scene and they present their music to them, they, as I say, are the people who do a check on the music and then present that music monthly to us, and then we schedule it in our daytime schedule, which is a big commitment. Whereas if you try to do that with a commercial station or other music station, people would find it very, very tough going to try and get any airplay.
Now we're going to come back now to this whole business of whether presenters are actually able to choose the music, and whether sometimes the computer.
You're very concerned about
well,
this. I'm interested in. Well,
you're
the
here.
Music, the
you're
music
here. Why?
BCFM,
you're,
actually.
Well, you're here. Why now? Because we're going to hear Jason Harold, who's being forced by the computer to play a very sunny day song on a rainy day.
We've got now the editor being asked to comment on one of his presenters.
You can always say no comment if you want to, Tim.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's just have a little listen to this. Extract from Jason Harold back earlier in the year.
Okay.
Ask Katrina in the waves. out, Walking on Sunshine. There we are. That's inappropriate song number one. I know it's mild, but it's not that warm, is it? BBC Radio Bristol and BBC Somerset for a Wednesday afternoon. We're at the midpoint of the week. That's good. We're on the hump. We're almost over the cusp to go helter-skeltering downhill towards the weekend. Alex is with us as ever. Hello.
Hello. Hello.
You all right there?
Yes,
you okay?
Yes,
thanks. Good. That's all right. Lucy, you left your keys out there. Is that all right?
Yeah.
That's all right,
yeah.
Then. Oh, good. Glad you're all right. Well, I'm okay, but I thought last night, I might have been dying, because I thought the man flu had brought on something else. And,
yeah.
And then B, when I did realise that it probably wasn't life-threatening, I thought I'd got gout. See, why does everybody laugh?
Because right. Gout is a kind of... everyone knows how painful it's supposed to be, but it's kind of an old man's...
It is.
Too much poor illness.
Do you know, exactly, that's exactly it. It was something I thought that old people suffered from, and it is a comedy illness. When you see somebody, I've got the gout!
Yes,
me! You're not going to laugh!
Well, if you've got the gout, you'll soon find out.
Well, another thing, you see, because at Christmas, I always have, over Christmas, somebody always buys me a bottle of port, which was nice.
Oops.
But I also, because of my birthday a few weeks ago, somebody bought me a bottle of port for my birthday as well. I haven't cracked it open until I got over the back end of this cold this last week.
Yeah.
So I had a little snifter before I went to bed last night. I had some cheese and I was watching the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
I thought, shall I get blind drunk while I'm watching the curling, because it might make it interesting. But no, I just had a wee glass of port and I thought, I was paranoid. I thought, that's it, I'm not drinking any more port.
That's it.
It's giving me gout.
Thanks.
Thanks for your sympathy in this very difficult time. And there's also a survey out that says more life-changing decisions are made in the bath than anywhere else.
What happens if you don't have a bath? We don't have a bathtub anymore.
Don't you?
No, we just have an extra large shower.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
But I suppose, yeah.
Shower?
Maybe. All right, then I'll accept shower. This is the question I'm going to ask. What are the best things to do in the bath? I mean, I'm sure you remember bath night when you were younger.
Read.
People read. I had this amazing, and I never knew what happened to it.
Yeah.
It was a big plastic boat I had when I was a kid, and when we moved house, I think it disappeared.
Yeah.
I think it sailed. Well, you know our cat sort of like going back to. I think this boat sailed back up the street.
Back.
It didn't move far away.
Yeah.
I think it sailed up the gutter.
Yeah.
So, what's the best thing to do in the bath, please?
Okay, well, I think we'll leave it there. That's Jason Harrell. Yeah, can you understand why some of the presenters are, you know, sort of railing against the music that's being produced by a computer when it doesn't, you know, as we heard at the beginning of there, it's a sunny, lovely song, but actually it's a really dull day out there.
Well, as I've said before, you know, I think that I wouldn't go into the detail of talking about that particular clip that you played.
But surely Jason is able to choose his own music, isn't he?
I'm trying to get away from talking about Jason because that's unfair. You know,
it was anybody else.
Any presenter just in the general round, as I think I've made my position clear, that we all have to be very careful about not making radio for ourselves and be very clear about the audience. That's who we're serving. It's not Tim Pemberton's private little radio station. It's not Tony Gosling's little thing, and I'm going to do my thing. And that. I mean, I think people perhaps have that view of this is what a jock does, and therefore I'm going to show that. Actually, you'll find in music stations, and I'm not, you know, I wouldn't claim to be an expert in music stations, but if you went to most music stations, you'd see that they're actually very tightly produced and controlled, and they play the music that they are given because it is understood. We have done the hard work for you in sorting out the music that our audience loves. We know it. We've done the data. If you're saying, why can't I choose my own music? The first thing I would say, well, how do you know that your audience likes that track? How do you know? And if you're going to say, well, I've got this kind of feeling, well, I'm going to say, well, actually, we've got the solid data.
But I mean, and a lot of certainly data, in the commercial sector.
I put my solid data. Commercial radio would tell you this. That put my solid data against your feeling
and
your water.
What the commercial sector do is they will simply look at, I mean, they want their adverts to be going out to people of the higher income areas, and so what they're trying to do is use the station as a way of a sort of conveyor belt to convey those adverts to the higher income brackets out there, and that doesn't really, it isn't necessarily giving a broad spectrum of different tastes in music of the various listeners.
But I think you have to be realistic. What they do is they play popular music and they play the tracks that people want to hear. If they were not doing it, then they wouldn't have the size of audiences that they do have. In our own case, Radio 1, Radio 2, they wouldn't be the successful stations that they are if it was just left to the chance of, let's just let the presenters come in and pick what they want to play. I mean, there are some practical issues with it as well, because everyone knows you then start getting duplications. All the presenters want to play the same sorts of songs. No, actually, there's a much more sophisticated way of approaching this. There are a lot of good songs out there, good music. Most radio stations follow the same sort of patterns that we do, which is they take the trouble to test the songs and to retest the songs, and then the skill of the presenter. It may be that you get up a song that you feel, I mean, one of the interesting things that we found in our testing is that ballads, which quite a lot of presenters do not like because they feel it slows the pace of the show, are some of the most cherished and loved songs, some of the most favourite songs amongst the audience. Well, that's where the skill of the presenter comes in, to be able to craft what they have to say to fit that song and to fit the mood of the audience.
One of the phrases used in one of the letters in the Evening Post, when you heard there Jason Harrowood and his assistant, I mean, it's not really an equal relationship. It almost seems like it's just a sort of giggly girl in the background. Do you think that's what Alex is really there for?
As I say, I wouldn't comment on that. I mean, that's like me taking a clip out of your show and then asking someone to critique it in that kind of way. I don't think that's fair at all.
Let me just quote from the Evening Post letter then, which was on Friday, January the 15th. It says that it's a little more than less than hilarious banter between him and his near hysterical female assistants. Now, do you recognise that?
No, because I know that radio is subjective, and none of us should pretend that we are the embodiment of the audience. So because you don't like something or I don't like something, I shouldn't pretend then that is the totality of you. Some people may like it, some other people may not like it. We listen in the round, and where we can, we tweak and address things. But because I have a particular view, I shouldn't assume that that's the view of everybody.
Okay. What about the Phil Hammond on Saturdays? Do you think that's a good, successful, innovative bit of radio?
I'm interested in what you think, actually.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I listen to it from time to time, and actually, I mean, it's just for some reason, some of the presenters on Radio Bristol, I just want to turn off. I just don't want to listen to them.
That was a slightly unfair thing on my part towards you, because that show has just had three successive sweeps in which it's been the most successful than it's ever been. And they're recording record figures on a Saturday morning. That's why it was a fairly unfair thing to ask you. So do I like Phil Hammond? Yes, I do. I think he's a person with profile. He's an incredibly intelligent man, incredibly witty. He has multiple things going on in terms of his radio career, his writing career, his comedy career. He's a very creative person, and I think we're very fortunate to have him.
What about the whole business with David Lowe, though? Because I'm sure there's many people listening out there who really want to know what's happening with this programme. I understand it's not actually made in Bristol, even though it's a regional programme every Saturday evening, and I think he has another one too. So what's the state with David?
Yeah, it's an interesting one there as well, as I say, because as I pointed out at the beginning, I think that that was the catalyst for quite a large number of the letters, and it led on to a whole array of other things that people wanted to say about Radio Bristol. The actual programme is originated in Devon, they took a view with regards to the audience, and to be fair, they did tell us about their view and what they wanted to do with the programme, because there has to be consultation. But as the originators of the programme, they felt that it was right for a change. I have to say, little known to people, that the audience figures for the programme were not as great as people thought. And in the last sweep, the Radar figures that have just been out 2 weeks, the changes have seen a growth in the audience. The audience is higher with the new programme than it was with David Lowe.
Are these Radar figures available publicly?
Yes, they are, actually. You can go onto websites and see them. Websites in.
The other thing I used to really enjoy in the mornings on Radio Bristol was the consumer spot, which you reminded me was called Sorted.
Yes.
Now, this is something which I think radio can do, which is merely make it a force for good and justice out there, especially when people are maybe faced with bills of thousands of pounds for things they haven't, that come through the door, this kind of thing. Why has that gone?
We talked about it in the production team about how we could do it well, how we could do it better. It's quite labour intensive, and there is an array of stories and issues. One of the things is some of it's just general consumer advice, and to be making a big thing of what is really general consumer advice is quite a tricky thing. Others, there are real cases where actually you need to get into that and have a look and see whether you know, a retailer or some sort of shop has treated somebody unfairly. And on balance, in talking to the production team, the feeling was that we were getting fewer of those and more of the general consumer advice.
Well, it takes a bit of time to sort people's problems out, doesn't it?
And so what we decided we would do, we went into doing a new shape for the programme called BBC Bristol Investigates, where we were trying to take on specific individual better stories and to grow that strand instead. But it does take a lot of time and resource.
Okay, final question, Tim. BCFM has an hour a week of highlights of our output on Radio Bristol, but why has it been moved to a Sunday night at 4 a.m?
Well, Phil Gibbons and Joanne Schofield, who do the programme, I've spoken to them. We've always spoken about where the programme is. It's always been in the overnight zone sequence that we do.
Well, I've heard it during the daytime. I think it was a Saturday afternoon.
I think you must have the wrong program.
Well, possibly,
because it's always been overnight.
Anyway,
with us, what we do is,
sorry,
we
Tim,
make it,
that's
available on the iPlayer.
That's all we've got time for. Thanks ever so much for getting a grilling from BCFM.
No problem.
And do join us again next week. We're on the internet, a podcasted at www.thisweek.org.uk.
It is run by volunteers.
See you next week.
To give everybody in Bristol a voice.